This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We always love talking to this guy because he just makes us feel like we're really positive, sunshiny people. And can you imagine if we had a segment, What's Bugging Ryan Divish? It wouldn't be a segment. It'd be a show. You know, it'd be 4 hours,
yeah,
you think?
Also, his buddy, Condota, is sitting out here in the sports room here.
Does he claim him as his buddy, or is he more of an
acquaintance? Sure he does.
Well, let's ask him. He's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. You know him, you love him, does a great job covering the Seattle Mariners for the Times. Ryan Divish is with us. How are you, man?
I'm good. I'm good. You can punch Condota in the face.
Punch Condota in the face. All right.
Does he still have the hair where he looks like Christopher Lloyd from Back
looks
to
like
the
Doc
future?
Brown.
He's he gets so mad at me.
Just put his hood on.
1.21 gigawatts. Are you
crazy? that is lovely. That is it's a look. It's definitely a look.
I asked Condota if he had a message to exchange to you and present to you, and he lifted his middle finger. That was it. I don't know what that means.
It's something he delivers to me quite often, actually.
Well, Ryan, we got hot stove league action going on. Everybody wondering where Aaron Judge is going to land and all these other players we've discussed. But I'm curious, before we talk about what the Mariners may do, what do you think of what they have done? They made some moves while I was on vacation. I love the Teoscar Hernandez acquisition. How did you feel about that one?
You know, I didn't see it coming in the sense of that. Just, I guess for me, that wasn't a player that was on my radar that was available, you know. And I mean, the last time I'd really thought about Teoscar Hernandez was how many more homers is he going to hit off of Robbie Ray in one game? You know, you know, he's a really good player. I just didn't know that he would be available. I guess I didn't really understand it. I hadn't looked at his contract situation and everything like that, seeing how he was a kind of 1 year from free agency and was going to make a lot in arbitration. I didn't know that that would be a guy that they would want, you know? And so, I was like, wow, this is a very Jerry DePoto move. He went one way when everybody else was expected to go another way. And, it was kind of impressive, and, he'll help them. I mean, he's right-handed power bat. I don't know that, you know, he didn't have his best year this year, dealt with some oblique issues and stuff, but you know, he brings a presence to the middle of that order, and it's a needed presence. I mean, I thought it was a really, really smart move by the Mariners to pick him up.
What did you think of what they gave up for him?
I didn't, you know, I mean, Swanson's a good pitcher, and I like him. I mean, Swanson's a guy that I can talk about, you know, FCS football with, so not a lot of guys on the football team or the base Mariners want to talk about Montana versus North Dakota State football.
Yeah,
but,
I can't blame
them. You know, it's not an exorbitant price by any means. I thought it was pretty fair, you know. Like, you know, if you look at what the Mariners have done these last years with the bullpen, they seem to find ways to take pitchers and make them better within their system, whether it's finding a guy like Paul Sewald that's on the scrap heap and doing some things to make him better, taking guys within your organization. Eric Swanson, when they acquired him, was kind of a starter. When they got him from the Yankees, you move him to the bullpen, you know, all these kinds of things. I mean, look what they did with Matt Brash by the end of the season. So, you know, there's a ton of arms in the Mariners farm system that, you know, could convert to a reliever down the stretch when they need them, and, you know, never underestimate their ability to go out and find some guys, maybe lesser known guys that they feel like they can make better if they just use them in a certain role. And I think that's the big thing about the Mariners pitching. And you know, some people kind of beat up on Scott Service about his bullpen usage. But if you look at the whole of the season, he found pockets, or what he calls the pockets, of where guys are going to have their best success against the lineup. And essentially that's what managing and coaching is looking at your roster and putting those players in the best possible situations to succeed when you need them most. So I think the Mariners can go out and find another guy like Eric Swanson. It just isn't easy or readily available for them to find a guy like Teoscar Hernandez.
That's kind of interesting what you said about the bullpen, and you know, you talk about Scott Service. It's kind of like what's going on with Geno and Pete Carroll. Like, you know, coaching is like the best thing you can do is get the most out of your player, and I think that's what's going on there. Who do you most closely attribute that to? Is it Service or is it Woodworth or what?
Yeah, I think it's Pete Woodworth, Trent Blank. They have another pitching an analyst named Joel Furman, WSU kid that works in their baseball ops side. That's really good. They have a lot of people working hard on thinking, and then in the development aspect down in the minor leagues as well. They have guys that look. It's not the craziest philosophy in the world. It's like, look, this is your best pitch per the data. Throw it more. You know, like with some of these guys, like with Eric Swanson, for a while, he really loved his fastball, and he was throwing at 99 miles an hour. What the data told him is that when he threw it harder, he had less command, and it wasn't as good of a pitch. And they said, look, you're better off throwing at 95 than trying to throw at 99 and not know where it's going. Throw at 95 in the right spots, but throw this more, throw the split finger more when you face lefties, and throw the slider. You need to throw the slider more when you face righties, and you'll have more success. It's some of those things. It's just like changing your thinking, finding what you're successful at and doing it more often. It's not complicated, but you'd be surprised how easy it is for professional athletes to make things complicated, because things like egos, contracts, everything else gets involved. I mean, just ask somebody down in Denver.
Hey, the other move they made was trading Kyle Lewis, who we were all very high on, you know, rookie of the year in the pandemic season. But I've got to believe this is just about his availability and is, you know, whether he was going to be able to play out in the field with that knee issue. And I know, you know, the word was he wasn't that happy with the organization, thought, you know, he shouldn't have been sent down, perhaps. I don't know. Was this more about the relationship with the organization, or do you think this was more about, we just don't know that we can count on this guy to be available?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of those things. It's a little bit of everything. And like, how does he fit? You know, the Mariners don't want to use a full-time DH. They just don't. And I mean, if you're going to do a full-time DH, you need to have a full-time DH is like JD Martinez in his prime or Nelly Cruz in his prime. That's when you commit to the full-time DH. Kyle Lewis is not those guys, even when he's healthy. I mean, you look at his numbers over the time that he's been in the big leagues. It's 3.5 weeks of really good baseball. I've carried him for a lot. I mean, like you look at the rookie of the year, he had a really strong month and then kind of faded. He just didn't fade as much as Eloy Jimenez that year. And so it's like those are kind of, you know, he had yet to really prove that he was a viable MLB player when he was healthy. And he was never healthy. And, you know, the problem was is last year at times when he finally came back from the knee issue, it was unpredictable when he would play. Like, they couldn't just say, okay, we're going to play you these 2 days at DH. You're going to take a day off here because there is this guy pitching, and then you're going to come back. Well, they tried to do that. And then what would happen is when he was supposed to come back, he'd say, like, no, I can't go today. My knee's not right, or I'm not feeling it. We need somebody else to go. You just can't have that unpredictability of when you're going to be available or post, especially when you really can't play the field. I mean, I think the Mariners have just kind of were past the point of believing that he was ever going to be able to play outfield with any sort of consistency or really any viability. So then they're looking at him as only a DH. Well, he's a DH that hasn't hit, but even then when he's only DHing, he's still not available every time you need him. And that's just tough to carry when you're carrying 13 and 13, and it puts a strain on the rest of the players. And you know, that's not something that makes you popular with your teammates, you know, because like these guys, when you are supposed to play that day and then you can't post, as they say, then somebody else has to play for you that was maybe expecting to get a day off. And that just starts to kind of, you know, permeate. So I just think they didn't like the uncertainty of his availability, and also just the fact that, like, look, he has essentially not proven that he's that level of an impact hitter at the MLB level to kind of wait it out and see if this works, you know, to kind of give them the special treatment to keep him on the roster.
Hey, have you seen the Dylan Moore car commercial, the local one?
I think so, yeah.
I'm trying to remember the last time I remember seeing a Mariner. And I don't know. It just kind of speaks.
Mitch Haniger was doing the roof.
Oh, that's right. Mitch Haniger does the roof thing. That's true. That's true. But for a guy who's, Mitch is a starter and everything, and Dylan Moore is kind of a utility guy. Just really kind of speaks to how much beloved he is. But what about if you had to choose between him and Sam Haggerty? And really my question is more about Haggerty, just because, he was hurt at the end. There's some question as to whether or not that guy is an everyday player.
I don't know that he is, mostly because he's not great batting left-handed. But the thing about Sam was he wasn't a switch hitter growing up. He didn't start switch hitting until he was in high school, late in high school. So he's not left-hand dominant. Like a lot of switch hitters that do it all their lives are better from the left side. He's not. He's a better hitter from the right side. And we kind of saw that towards the end. Like when he had to bat left-handed a lot, he got exposed. I don't know that he's an everyday player. I think he's very valuable as kind of that super sub or even as a platoon player. You know, there's some question as to how healthy he is right now. I know that he was with Team Italy. They had like an initial training camp or an initial get together for the WBC. But there was some discussion or rumors that he may have actually had to have surgery on the groin or adductor area after that injury if they had hoped that he had avoided it. But we haven't gotten a firm answer on whether he is or isn't. But I like him, but, you know, I think he's better in the role of coming off the bench and playing, you know, not every day. Same with like Dylan Moore. I think you just kind of, those are what they're really good at. And like, if you're the Mariners, get greedy. Like, don't say, oh, yeah, look, we have Sam Haggerty. No, like, you just got to the postseason. You won a series. Get greedy. Get more guys. You know, like, they shouldn't be satisfied with just adding Teoscar Hernandez to the outfield. They should get another outfielder along with the middle infielder. Like, have an abundance of talent instead of trying to piece it together, because that's what happened last year. Like, we thought they had too many outfielders last year when they got Winker. Then Haniger gets hurt. Then Kelenic gets sent down. All of a sudden, you've got Haniger and Dylan Moore running out, Haggerty and Dylan Moore running out and starting games in the outfield. That's precisely what they didn't want, and the reason they went and got Winker and some of these other guys. So I say be greedy and get as many guys as you can.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that, because you do have a lot of the – I mean, you throw Toro into that mix as well. I mean, guys that are just – yeah, you can plug and play here and there, but the idea that they're occupying a spot every game doesn't seem realistic, and it doesn't seem like the move they need to make. So – what do they do? They had Adam Frazier in the outfield last year too. So what do they go out and get another outfielder? Are we assuming that Mitch he's gone, so we need to fill that spot? And what do they do about second base?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, Dave, I'm sure heard of it, but in baseball, you know, there's JAG, just another guy. You don't want Jags in the outfield. You want dudes, you know, you want dudes at positions if you can do that. Abraham Toro is just another guy in a lot of ways. And so you don't want to have that guy out there. I know that Morosi said he thinks that Mitch is gone. Maybe he is. I don't chase the rumor mill quite that much. If he is, he's gone. Then they have to look at it and say, are we really satisfied going into the 2023 season with our starting outfield being Julio Rodriguez, Teoscar Hernandez, and then some form of Haggerty, Jarek Kelenic, Jesse Winker in left field. I mean, that's just, to me, that's not ideal. You know, that's not an outfield that pushes you towards past the Astros. I mean, like, mm-mm. You know, you have to go get a dude. You have to get a guy. Now, like, if they knew they had Mitch coming back, or say they're going to sign Mitch, if you have an outfield that is Mitch, Teoscar Hernandez, and Julio, with Kelenic as your fourth, and if you have Winker on your roster as more of a DH but a part-time outfielder, that's a lot better. You know what I mean? Like, that's what you need to do. So if Mitch isn't going to sign with them, you know, if that ship has sailed, then they better go find another outfielder by a free agency, by a trade. You know, do they take a chance, a flyer on Michael Conforto? I don't know. But you can't be satisfied with what you have there, you know. And, you know, that it just doesn't work that way. They have to add more. You're losing – that's a premium outfield spot or a premium offensive spot, and you need to supplement more. You just can't go, because if you don't fill that spot with another kind of proven bat, then you're back to kind of the same lineup you had last year. You're running all the same kind of problems. You're asking, well, we're hoping Jarek Kelenic puts it all together, or we're hoping that Winker's bad year was just because of the injuries, and he's going to come back stronger and healthier and be the guy we thought he's going to be. I mean, that's a lot of ifs or hopes. And when you've done what they've done and you have the expectations building, you can't use hope all the time on that. Yeah. Same with middle infield. Like, how many years? Like, oh, yeah, well, Dylan Moore, we're going to try him there because he had a strong month. Or Shed Long. No, go get a guy. You know, whether it's Colton Wong, if you have to trade for him, or Brandon Lau, or, you know, I don't know, if you have to trade for a middle infielder, or you sign a guy, get a guy so you're not sitting there trying somebody to have them prove the spot. You know, they're not at a point now where they're giving spots for people to prove themselves. You're giving spots because they're good enough to be there, and you don't have to worry about it.
What do you expect from Matt Brash? He's kind of one of those guys that you know, he's been hot and cold, and, you know, wonder where he's going to land. What are your expectations? It seems like there's some really spectacular upside with Matt Brash.
I think he's going to – well, I just saw some Twitter. He's at Driveline Baseball working on throwing a cutter and doing some stuff, which is, you know, it's always good to see these guys working on their craft, trying to get better. I was told by DePoto at the GM meetings that they're going to stretch him out, that they want him to stretch out and prepare like he's going to be a starter next year and compete for a starting job. You know, and if he doesn't get it, then he'll go back to the bullpen. But I think you do that because you're worried about depth. You're worried about how many innings Logan and George threw this year. Maybe you're thinking, look, we're going to stretch him out and keep him stretched out in case, you know, they're looking to get an outfielder, a middle infielder, and they have to move Flexen or Marco or somebody like that. And then you add Matt Brash in there. They have some depth, you know, some starting depth at AA that was really talented. That's basically somebody they're probably all debut at some point this year. But yeah, I mean, I think stretch him out, tell him because that's what he wants. He still wants to be a starter because you make money when you're a starter. I think he wants to start, give him the chance to start. If it doesn't work, you know, he can have success in the bullpen because he's done it, you know, and you believe that you're good enough at finding pieces on the periphery or in the free agent market to supplement your bullpen, allowing Matt Brash, if he decides to start, to do that.
Hey, what would you think about Cody Bellinger? Guy who's obviously got a track record of success is tailed off. I don't know if it's because of injury or trying to compensate or what have you, but what are your thoughts on him?
I mean, I think he's really talented, and defensively he'd be better in any outfielder they have other than Julio from a defensive standpoint. I don't know that from what it sounds like, is Boris wants to do a one-year pillow contract type of deal where you go out and prove yourself. I don't know that you go to Seattle to do that kind of contract. You know, you want to go to a bandbox or someplace where you know that you're going to put up numbers so you can get that long-term deal. Mm. I mean, he's supremely talented. And I think if he's only looking for a one-year deal, I think a lot of teams are willing to roll the dice on him as a bounce-back guy on a one-year deal. Like was the old baseball saying, there's no such thing as a bad one-year contract. So I think, yeah, maybe he could help the Mariners. I mean, if you believe that you know, you've done your analysis and say, if we do these things, we can fix him or maybe make him a little bit more like that guy that he was when he was a MVP. But I think that, like, there's going to be a lot of teams that want him that are willing to take a step on him and say, hey, yeah, come prove yourself here. And for him, it's going to be, where does he think he can have the most success to kind of build up his market value again, because it's really diminished.
Divish, we had Bruce Irvin in here the other day, and we brought up the who the bleep is Jimmy. And I remember you expertly wrote that column about Bruce
yeah.
Irvin kicking his ball into the stands. Have you been following NFL at all?
I followed it a little bit. I mean, obviously with the Seahawks, and, you know, I can't escape Condotto, so I've been watching a little bit of it. I remember that, Jimmy. Who the F is Jimmy? And, yeah, it was great. I mean, like, man, those Seahawks teams were not dull to cover. You know, it was kind of crazy because you'd have to – I mean, like, I had to help out a lot more because, like, if the moment Doug Baldwin started talking, you had to be there, you know, because, like, you just didn't know what he was going to say. You had to have somebody there. Same with Sherman, all these guys. And, you know, and they could talk, they could perform. It was a lot of fun. So I still watch NFL. I mean, I'm a degenerate gambler, so of course I watch NFL.
Hey, what is your sense of the Mariners' salary situation or their budget, if you will, what they're willing to spend? I know they're never going to say it publicly, but it's interesting with the response I get when I'll talk, whether it's on the air, on Twitter, about specific players. Oh, they'd never spend that money. They'd never spend that money. I'm like, well, they just spent a truckload of money on Julio. They bring in Luis Castillo and sign him to an extension. They signed Robbie Ray. I'm not saying they're the Yankees or the Dodgers or the Phillies when it comes to payroll, but they're not the A's or the Orioles either. So what is your sense of where the, do you see them increasing it by a bunch at all? Is it going to be the same? How do you see them managing what they're working with financially?
Well, it has to increase. It increases every year by rate of basic inflation, you know, and then also just because guys on your controllables get more expensive, they're arbitration eligible. So it's got to increase
right.
a little bit. I mean, like the last year of Cano and Cruz in 2018, they were carrying about $175, $180 million payroll budget, you know, and that's one thing people like see. They look at Spotrac and some of these other places. You got to remember, they pay out the whole 40 man and there's some other stuff that goes into it. So the budget's probably a little higher than what you think. It should get back up there. Again, they're not paupers. They make a lot of money. I mean, the ratings at Root Sports, I'm sure, were very, very high this year during broadcast. I mean, they picked up, you know, they're making some money off of the Kraken and the Timberwolves just by having tenants in there. And, you know, you're getting dollars based of revenues that you don't have to revenue share. But yeah, it should go up. Like, I think there is a point. Like, they can afford to go out and give Carlos Correa $350 million. Like, if they're willing to do that, I'm sure Carlos Correa would sign. He essentially, from everything it sounds like, just give him the most money and he will sign with you. But there is also a point of, like, reasonable sanity when you're doing this. Like, you know, you can't sit there and dump everything because eventually it just comes back to bite you. You know, at some point down the road, it comes back and then you're stuck paying these guys. You know, like it was a gift that they got out of Robbie Cano's contract. Even if Kelnick mm-hmm. never proves to be anything, it was a gift to get out of that. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I think a lot of people are like looking at the shortstop class and we'll just give Trey Turner $350 million or whatever. Maybe that does it. I mean, I just know that they'd like to go after Ohtani next year and that of what they spend this year affects next year. If they pay out every dollar of those salaries or of like those salaries on Julio, Robbie, if Robbie Ray stays the full five and Castillo stays his five and Julio hits all of his deals, and that's what, $600 million? $650 million they're going to pay to three players. So it's not like you know, they've committed a lot of dollars. You know, they spend, but I think there is a point of spending in a way that's smart so it doesn't just like limit you significantly down the road. Now there isn't a salary cap. No, there isn't, but these guys aren't willing to do it. You know, and I don't know that, I mean, like I get it too, because like, do you want to be able to maybe extend Cal Raleigh or George Kirby or Logan Gilbert? You know, that money comes out of the same pot. What is it to get, say you wanted to get Trey Turner or you want to get Carlos Correa. Is it worth paying 25% over the market value to get them? If they're not even truly committed, you know, you got to pay that much to get them in there in the first place. And then they're there. I mean, like, I don't know. I guess, you know, I think that you have to overpay, but there is a limit or a point of reasonable. And, you know, that's what they have to kind of adhere to. I mean, for me, if you're going to spend $350 million, I'd probably spend it on Ohtani over Carlos Correa.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you're getting two for one there. You're getting a frontline pitcher and a guy who's going to bring thump to the lineup. So that's I would love that move, and hopefully we're talking next season about their pursuit of him. But, Ryan, always great stuff. We really appreciate you taking the time, and happy Thanksgiving, man.
Yeah, you guys enjoy it. Enjoy the turkey day. Drink a lot. That's always what makes Thanksgiving and spending time with your family better, alcohol.
Thanks, Divish.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, see ya.
There you go. There's Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times. If you missed any of that conversation with Ryan or anything from our show, make sure you check out the podcast page at seattlesports.com. Click the podcast tab. Click on our picture. It's right there after the show waiting for you. What do they do next, Dave?
Subscribe.
That's right. I got Matt yesterday. He wasn't ready for it.
Oh, Matthew.
Just faked him out. Totally
faked him
out. I
wasn't paying attention. I'm sorry.
We are talking sports.
Sometimes I'm not either.
All right, coming up, is Tyler Lockett the most underrated player in the NFL? We're going to get into that next with Wyman and Bob, live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
It is Wyman and Bob live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. Our thanks to Ryan Divish, in case you guys just tuned in. Really good conversation with Ryan, and that will be available on the podcast page for you after the show at seattlesports.com. Meanwhile, I was on Twitter last night, and I was just telling you earlier today about seeing trending topics, and I saw Tyler Lockett was trending. I'm like, oh, is there an injury, or what's going on? And again, you have to scroll through 8,000 people commenting on Tyler Lockett to figure out what it is they're responding to. And I sent you the text, and it was from something called, or the tweet, it was from something called Gridiron or whatever. But they just put out a little graph, and they got a line that says production, and then a line at the top, and then it says talent, a line at the top, and then it says recognition, and you see just a tiny little red line, basically asking, and then they said name the player. Yeah. So that was something that was out there that everybody on Twitter commented on, and so somebody who's incredibly productive and talented, but very few people recognize. And he seemed to be the most popular. RG3 retweeted it and put Tyler Lockett. You had all these other athletes putting his name and people just talking about him. It was good and bad. It sort of confirmed what we knew. Obviously, we're very aware, and fantasy football players are aware. But in terms of like superstardom, he's not that guy. He's not the guy in the commercials. He's not DK. DK's got a much bigger profile than Tyler. And that's true of Hopkins and people like that. They're just more visual. People know who they are. They're probably talked about more, but Tyler is just that unsung hero who's just so remarkably good, consistent, solid, everything you could possibly. I would think if you were a quarterback, he is your dream teammate. He is your dream weapon. Yeah, you want the DKs and the DeAndre Hopkins and Justin Jeffersons, all those, but he is so good and so consistent. We talked about when Russ was here, and even without Russ, he is just that security blanket who, when the play falls apart and everybody's scrambling around trying to keep it going, all of a sudden he's got 5 yards of separation.
Yeah, it's amazing, and you're right. All of those things are so true, and yet he doesn't point to his nameplate. And I remember you asked him that a couple years ago, and about that, and he said, "Look, I just never been that kind of guy. I got to be true to myself." So, I was looking at some of the other. By the way, he does have that Microsoft commercial. I don't know if you've seen that now, where it's about the Microsoft
tablet that they have on the sideline.
Yeah. And so they have, and I was trying to freeze it because I wanted to see if those were any of his actual coaches, but they were all actors. And so they show him at the VMAC, and then the coach on the sideline, and he's, putting the play in, and you got to do this, that, and the other. And they don't show him actually catching the ball, but it's really well done. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's his only one, but if it's with Microsoft, then you like to think that he's getting paid handsomely. But yeah, that's it, though. I mean, and really, I was looking through to see what other people around, the league, and you can find 100 different lists of, different players. But I found one where it said Quandre Diggs, number 4, but that was going into the season.
Yeah.
And he hasn't quite had that year. T. Higgins is another one. And I was just looking like Keenan Allen. Somebody put Justin Tucker. I mean, he's the best kicker in the league.
Yeah, and he gets a lot of shine. There's a lot of they're doing features on him on Real Sports, and he's
right.
He gets more than enough recognition.
But I think the other thing too is if you look at offensive linemen, typically they're just automatically for no, without it's just like a default position that they're entirely underrated because nobody really. I think a lot of people don't really understand offensive line play, and I would say me partially included. I mean, look, there's lots of times where
You think they all cheat.
Well, they are cheaters. There's no question about that, but at least they're upfront about it.
Yeah.
Mark brags about it. Mark Schlereth. Yeah, but a lot of times they'll say, "Oh man, Russell's not getting much time," or Geno's not getting much time, and well, Russ too, or, I saw everybody in his lap and everything. And I'm like, a lot of times that's not necessarily on the offensive line. A lot of times it's on the quarterback. Sometimes it's on a running back or, maybe even a receiver that's supposed to come back in and help block. So, yeah, that they're automatically, like I said, default underrated.
Yeah.
But as far as a guy that is in what's probably –
it's a glamour position.
The flashiest position in the NFL. I mean, even right up there with quarterback. Because you see these ridiculous throws. You see the Justin Jefferson catch?
Oh.
And today I saw it's like the 10-year anniversary of the OBJ catch where he reaches back with one hand. And so, yeah, I mean, the receiver, and I guess Tyler's not making those kind of ridiculous one-handed catches, but what he does with his feet, Rabel said one time, he said, I think his toenails have eyeballs.
His consistency, though, is what is so remarkable to me, that he is that guy, and we've talked about it a million times. If he drops a ball or doesn't make a catch that hits his hands, it really stands out, because that's just not who he is. It's not part of his game. Same was true for Doug Baldwin. Same, if it hit the fingertips, you know, Bump says you touch it, you buy it, or something like that. That's you just expect that. They've conditioned you to expect, they're going to catch it because they were able to touch it.
Right.
And if he doesn't, you're like, whoa. That was really weird to see. I mean, he's that good. That's a compliment to him. And he's so consistent. And I think they nailed RG3 and all the other guys that were sending it out saying, Tyler Lockett, you're right. I think he's one of the best receiver. I'm not saying he's the best, but he's in that conversation. And he does it every year. Yet nationally, he's not a well-known guy.
Yeah. Well, somebody said he did Brown Bear commercials,
which is local. Yeah.
You know, and then somebody else said something about Pizza Hut commercials. I'm not sure. So
I haven't seen that. I haven't seen the Microsoft one either, though. So.
Yeah. If he is, I mean, I'm happy for him. But I mean, you know, I think Tyler, he's to the point where, like, you remember in the Giant game that he dropped that pass for a touchdown. It went off his face mask. And you remember the last time, at least for me, maybe somebody can text it in if they know, but the last time for me was the 2020 season. They were at Miami, and he was running a crossing route, and he dropped one that was really almost too easy, I think. And, you know, obviously should have caught it. But, I mean, when you remember the last time a guy has a drop, I mean, you know, we were talking earlier about Davante Adams. He's been targeted 112 times. And let me make sure I got the right stats here. 112 targets, 64 catches. So it's pretty close to 50%. Tyler, I mean, that guy, if it's even close to him, he's making the catch.
Yeah, I tend to look at any, like, whatever, I have to look it up, but whatever his ratio is, catch to targets, I'm just putting that on the quarterback. Like, he was targeted, but it was in his vicinity, but it wasn't, it was, you know, 5 feet over his head, or, you know, it was a throwaway where he was standing there.
Right.
I'm putting it on Geno or Russell or whoever is throwing him the ball. That's how good he is.
Remember the one he took in the forearm in the back of the end zone?
The fastball from Russell, he said it hurt.
What do you think about that? That hurt. But yeah, it drills him right in the forearm. And then I think his glove comes off. He still makes the catch. I mean, so I'm glad to see that people recognize that at least.
Yeah, it's more importantly from his peers. That's kind of what was my point of sending it to you guys is seeing that, maybe not all the fans, and I don't expect everybody to know everybody on every roster, but he is truly one of the more underrated players in this league, and I don't think that's a stretch at all to say that.
Well, and you mentioned the peers. I remember a couple of times, I've told this story before, but Gary Reasons, who was a good linebacker on that Giant crew, he didn't like come over and gosh or anything, but we were walking off and he goes, hey, I've been watching you on film, man. I think you do a good job on the inside. And I was like, it's like somebody handed me like a $200,000 check. I mean, you get that from your peers, somebody that plays your position. It's money. So I'd much rather see it coming from his fellow players than fans, because, you know, obviously we're all sort of somewhat biased, but I think when you get it from not just your teammates, but your guys around the league, that's really cool.
All right. It is Wednesday, which means we play the hypothetical. What if? Today's what if is, what if the Seahawks had taken away the Bucs' run game? What are we looking at there? We'll get into that. Coming up next with Wyman and Bob, live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
What?
It's time for What If Wednesday.
Coach would have put me in fourth quarter. We'd have been state champions, no doubt.
Wyman and Bob rewrite the scripts of major moves and moments in sports every Wednesday afternoon. Now step into an alternative reality with Wyman and Bob.
It is what we do every Wednesday. What If Wednesday, presented by Mazda of Everett. And today's hypothetical question is, Dave, what if the Seahawks had taken away that Bucs run game, which was absent before the game. So they just kept it away rather than giving up 161 yards to the worst rushing team in the NFL. Did Brady look like a guy that I feel like any time I bet against him or doubt him, proves me wrong. And I think he's done that to a lot of people for a lot of years. But, you know, it felt like, all right, you're coming in as a one-dimensional opponent there. And they might be able to get some things done against Brady. And then, obviously, that wasn't how it worked out. But based on what you saw, do you think Brady still would have been able to beat him if they were just a passing attack and they ran for 60 yards combined or something like that?
No, I don't think so. I really don't. That kept – and then it iced the game at the end. Here's another what-if for you. What if they had gotten the ball back on the last possession where, remember, the rookie Rashad White had a run and then he slid down and killed the clock? What's the likelihood of Geno taking him down and getting the winning score? I think it's pretty good. There's nothing – today we talked to John Boyle from Seahawks.com today, and the thing is about the way that Geno's playing, it's not like any kind of a – like, remember, sometimes when you have a rookie quarterback, you sort of put him in, you know, hey, you're a game manager,
right,
or you're a this. Geno, I feel like, has done everything, but he hasn't done that yet.
That comeback, we were talking about that yesterday. Just the one thing, when we were talking about his contract, what do you pay him?
Yeah.
Some of the response from texters is, we haven't seen that, you know, hey, there's 90 seconds left on the clock, you got two timeouts and 80 yards to go, and you're down, but you need a touchdown to win. Yeah. We saw that all the time with Russ. He kind of made his name on that. We haven't seen Geno in that situation. We saw last year when he filled in for Russ in those situations, turnovers happened at the end of the game. We saw him fumble in this game that was very costly. So that's the missing ingredient, I guess, just to feel that. For me, that sense of security with him, like, yeah, he is this guy. Yeah. He is that guy.
Yeah, and last week we talked about that's the last box that needs to be checked. And that, I believe he can do it. So, I mean, if he gets the ball back there, I think he takes him down the field. I mean, it's not 100% because things happen. Maybe the ball gets tipped or something like that. I just think he has the ability to do that. But I don't think – maybe this was a good little lesson as far as the running game goes. And maybe you just learn things as they go on. And it becomes terribly apparent, you know, during the game, but – it's not so much that way before. Just how you think about, you know, I remember getting ready for games and, you know, studying and all the formations, and there was always, every week, there was something that was different that we had to adjust to on the sidelines.
Right.
That's what happens in the NFL. But then the game never, ever went the way I thought it would go. You know, when you go into a game, you have these expectations, and it was always took a hard left or right turn. And so that's entirely what happened to the Seahawks. I mean, I don't think we made a big deal out of the whole Monet thing. And actually, Brian O'Connell, our radio guy, would notice that right away and like, okay, well, I guess this is something that has to do with us not respecting their run game.
Yeah.
But also, like I said in the football 101 thing I did, it's very simply done, but you can see where there's more gaps than there are players. So That to me is a fairly easy fix.
Yeah. Let me give you a quick other what if, because there's something Turbin and I talked about yesterday, and again, talking about Geno and the money that he's going to be making. Mm. What if Drew Lock never came down with COVID, was able to play in that third game, and it was a neck-and-neck thing? I guess the question is, do you think he could be doing what Geno's doing had they said, you know what, Drew's our guy, played really well in that third game or whichever game it was he missed because of COVID? Because of the way the system is run, where you're taking checkdowns, you're using the tight ends, you're not asking Geno to throw it 50 yards in the air every time and hit home runs. Could Drew Lock have been this guy?
I don't think so. Like, we haven't seen enough of Drew Lock. But the one thing that kind of came with him, his reputation, and that we saw in the preseason, is that he doesn't make the greatest decisions. You know, and that's being prudent with where do you throw the ball. I feel like, you know, the one play that I did a couple of weeks ago against the Giants where Geno had an opportunity to throw DK a crossing pattern at the end of the game, get into the Giant game. They're trying to salt the win away. And I feel like Drew Lock throws that. Like, he's a gunslinger, whereas Geno tucks the ball, runs, gets the first down, and kills the clock, right? So I think Geno's just a better decision maker, and I think it's because of experience and that he's been around the league. But, you know, look, Drew Lock is a really talented player, but he just hasn't put everything together yet. Maybe in his 10th year. Like
yeah.
Gino, right?
Yeah.
But no, I don't think so. I think Gino's definitely the better decision maker. And that's the thing that's really impressed me about him is, you know, there have been times where he's thrown the ball up, but for the most part, he'll tuck it and run. And, you know, I did that a couple of weeks ago with the Giant game. There was one where everybody's covered, mm-hmm. and he recognizes that and he runs. And then the other one where there's a guy wide open and he doesn't throw it to him because, I mean, he could make that throw, but at that point in the game, that's just the wrong thing to do. Mm-hmm. The right thing to do is to tuck it, slide down, and kill the clock, meaning tick the clock off at the end of the game, salt away the game. And that's what he did. So I'm not so sure that Drew Locke is at that point in his career.
So, all right.
What do you think?
I have not seen enough of Drew Locke. I look at his numbers. I saw a couple of games. We could look at highlights. We talked about it. We played some cuts. Pete is still really high on how good he is and what he's capable of doing. And I just think with what's being asked of that spot right now, how Geno's playing that position, I'm wondering if that could be beneficial to Drew Locke. Like, hey, man, we don't need you to be the gunslinger. We don't need you to make the pass down. Take the check down. Tight end's open 4 yards away. Throw it to the freaking tight end. Right. You know, let's nick. They want a nickel and dime. Then we're going to do that. And Geno's been great at that. And I'm looking at Drew Locke and everything they've said about him. And I'm going, well, he could do that too, couldn't he? You know, it just made you think about that battle where it wasn't really a battle. He didn't get a ton of time. Then he gets COVID. He doesn't play in that game. And it kind of just kind of defaulted to Geno in that sense. And he's made the most of it, to say the least. So, yeah, just kind of an interesting thought. Meanwhile, is this a must-win game for the Seahawks and trying to keep up with the 49ers? Plus, we're going to discuss whether Thanksgiving is the perfect sports holiday. That is coming up next with Wyman and Bob, live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.